Banshees of Inisherin is over, but we are just getting started here on the Daily Oscar Podcast, the new series from Post Show Recaps Theater, where every day we're highlighting a Best Picture nominee. My name is Grace. I'm here with my co-host, Ariel. Ariel, how are you doing?
Hello. I am very excited to not be talking about Elvis.
That's very funny. You started singing and you were like, yesterday you were like, I sang on the first Elvis podcast. They're singing on the, I mean, this movie is about a man who's trying to make a song that will last in eternity and be remembered forever. So
that's true.
If you wanted to come up with a song you sing right now that will remembered for eternity,
I will think about it throughout the rest of the pod.
All right. And I'll be your dull friend. Of course, we're not alone. We like to have a guest here. We're joined by someone who we've tried very hard to get on the original Banshees of Inisherin recap pod. The timing did not work out. And so I think we're doing this whole series just to give this a second chance, which is Aiden is here to talk about our genuine Irish friend to talk about the Banshees of Inisherin. Aiden, how you doing?
Hello. Tomek of Mark. Onasatatu Machala. Hello. I'm doing well. Sorry, I just had to start off with a little bit of Irish. Because just to prove my authenticity. Hello, good to be here. Thank you so much. I was bummed I didn't get a chance to chat this movie with you before. So I am stoked that I get to delve into this masterpiece. As far as I'm concerned,
I'm only two films away from completing being able to watch all of the films that have been nominated for an Oscar. I'm just continue to brag about that. Although I brag about that and then watch my Oscars ballot. It's going to be terrible. I'm going to get everything wrong.
You didn't say one had anything to do with the other. So.
Yeah, that's right. But I recently watched The Quiet Girl, which is an Irish film. It's the Irish, it's in there for Best International Feature. And I did put it on thinking, it's an Irish film. And then it was fully in like Irish, the Irish language. I was like, I have to watch this later because I love the way you said, be able to like kind of do something else on the side. Yeah,
The Quiet Girl. Oh, you mean on Colleen Kuhn?
Yeah, that is. I mean, that is the name of it. All right, we're chatting about Banshees of Inisherin. Make sure you subscribe postyourrecaps.com/movies to make sure you get all of our daily Oscars pod, as well as all the other lovely coverage that Ariel and I are doing. Like, we covered Cocaine Bear this week. We'll be covering Creed 3 next week. But I don't know. The two of us have chatted about Banshees before. We really loved it. I think it's, you know, I keep flipping it back and forth in my first or second spot on my favorite movies of last year. What did you think? Imagine you came on and hated it. That'd be so funny.
Yeah, that would be a show. No, this is one of the few occasions that I've had in recent years where a movie has very much lived up to the hype. I remember seeing the trailer for this when it came out, seeing the people attached to it, obviously being familiar with all of their previous work together, I got very, very excited. I'm a big McDonagh fan. I'm an enormous Brendan Gleeson fan. And Colin Farrell's resurgence has been amazing. So I had really, really big hopes going into the movie. And it's exceeded them, as far as I'm concerned. It really stayed with me, this movie.
Yeah, Ariel, I know that Colin Farrell definitely in the front running to win lead actor, but also like I feel like we talked a little bit about like how Hong Chau got nominated for Best Supporting Actress for The Whale, but like actually The Menu is like her really breakout role. I feel like I was thinking about these two, and Oscars should add like not just from a specific film, but if you just had the best year, because Hong Chau I think wins category. For the women, but Colin Farrell had such a good 2022. He was in After Yang, and he's in in this, and he's in 13 Lives, and he's in The Batman. He had such a good 2022.
Yeah, his use of Spanish in The Batman notwithstanding, I think he had an amazing year. And I think that's such a fascinating, wow, like all of a sudden I'm really distracted and thinking how wonderful of an award that would be, because that's kind of like the cooler version.
It's like highest batting average versus like hitting a home run in a game, right? Like
yeah, totally. And I think it's interesting.
I was just gauging how genuine you're totally. Yeah, that's what I was like. Totally, totally. Your baseball reference. Totally, I get it. I get it. Yeah. Ariel, how you feeling about Banshees of Inisherin as we like move
I feel great kind of about this movie. I feel like it has gotten a lot of well-deserved attention. You know, we talk about things peaking too early or too late. I think this is one of those rare exceptions of just like it always feels like it's at the peak. Like it feels like it's been in the conversation since it came out. It hasn't really died down. I think, you know, you could argue like maybe the excitement around it or the newness has worn off a little bit, but I think The performances have probably only gotten more impressive over time. And I think the movie really stays with you. And it surprised me, you know, certainly the first time. I didn't get a chance to finish it a second time because now it's on HBO Max, which, you know, I don't love watching movies at home. Listeners will know this, but sometimes, you know, you got to make the exception. And that's the problem. The problem is you can stop the movie. It's like, I don't like having that much power.
This movie is on Disney in Canada, which is kind of hilarious. Yeah.
Yes. Same in Ireland.
Yeah.
So Disney. Perfect for children.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, there is kind of a fairy tale like vibe to this movie. I will cut off my fingers in order to to spite myself and you is there's something really darkly Grimm's fairy tale about that.
So that, and also Miss McCormick being a banshee on the island, like prophesizing that one, maybe two people will die. I do feel like there is this like almost like folklore tale to this story. I think one of the interesting things, I think it's like kind of easy to miss, maybe even in your first going, that it's not just like rural Ireland. It's actually rural Ireland in the 1920s, set on the backdrop of a real civil war. There's a lot of there's a lot of theorizing when it came out and why he chose to set it with the backdrop of the war. Is it that like their fight ultimately about, you know, this like little spat that they're having, is it meaningless, or is it like, is their fight a metaphor for the war? There was even like, I think, Eero, we talked through like a ghost theory where like, are they the same person because it's like a civil war within them? So is it like your desire to create art versus your desire to just live a happy life and be content with what you have? Like, I don't really buy into those. I think like we see what we see, but certainly I'm interested in your take on like, you know, as a real genuine Irish person, what you make of sort of him placing this movie with the backdrop of the Irish Civil War in 1923.
I mean, it is such a choice, but I do think that Martha McDonagh is a little bit smarter than that such obvious parallel of the state of Ireland at the moment. We're still not a republic. This is 1922. Mm-hmm. We had just completed our war of independence against the British Empire. What caused the Civil War was the rejection of the treaty that had been signed that ended the War of Independence and basically established Northern Ireland. The top six of the counties up in a province known as Ulster remained in control of the British, remained part of the UK basically, and 26 went on to be a free state later to become the Republic in the 40s. But there was a big split, pro-treaty and anti-treaty, and like the first thing that we as an independent nation did was go to war with ourselves. So it had to have been a very deliberate choice that he framed this essentially breakup movie alongside this in the background.
But a friendship breakup movie,
It's so on the head, it's so on the nose that I don't think that's all that he wanted to get across from that, because it's too unsubtle for McDonagh, I think.
Yeah, I think for me it's definitely, you know, I did notice it when I was watching, like there is this quality of there's a dreamlike quality to some of the things that happen, and you're wondering like certain things, if they're actually like how true they are and how true they are to the people. And I know specifically the part where you're watching, you know, there are moments where characters are either walking like much closer to a cliffside or kind of on the shore, and you can see evidence of battle like in the very far background, you know, literally on a different, you know, across the water. And I love
stops them in their tracks sometimes. Sorry, like as Siobhan is like leaving one time, it's like the gunshot, and she like it's like stops and they look, and then they like continue on with what they're doing.
Yeah, and like the idea that they are like, and I think I spoke about this on the original pod, like the idea that they're almost like existing on a separate reality of like they're kind of above, not above, but separate from that battle.
And
like
it's a fictional island too, right?
Right. And that gives them some leeway to like focus on the personal interdynamics and the personal drama, the personal battles, without it feeling like it's so much of a look at this, look, there's a real battle and there's also a battle between people. I think it's to Aiden's point, it's a little bit more complicated and intelligent than that.
I think what I read into it was they go a long way to show just how separate and kind of removed from the rest of the country this community on this fictional island of Inisherin is, mm-hmm. and how little they seem to give credence to what's going on in the mainland. Porrex Sullivan, at one point, Colin Farrell character, just goes, "Ah, good luck to you, whatever it is you're fighting about," which is a lovely, lovely little throwaway line. Now, maybe this is me reading too far into it, but that whole ambivalent attitude towards a conflict is very reminiscent of the Republic of Ireland's attitude towards the conflicts up in Northern Ireland, as in, that's removed from us. I'm sorry, because unfortunately in history that's kind of what happened. There were horrific things going on up in the north of Ireland, and the Republic didn't give it any credence. So it might be a little subtle nod to the kind of divorce of this island to the woes of the mainland. Cropped up for me when I was thinking about it anyway.
Well, so then you raise this point that this film is really about a breakup as we meet Park. He's, you know, thinking he's still friends with Calm, and then he sees Calm and Calm doesn't want to hang out with him anymore. It's really the whole impetus for the film, and really like Park's like inability to move on from this friendship. And it's like, that to me, that's where like so much of the humor is just like his sort of, you know, he pushes back about like how dull he is in the film, but the fact that he cannot see how annoying he's being by continuing to relent on. One of the things I really love about this movie is that, well, I do not agree with how Colm goes about treating his poor friend, our ex-friend Porrick, and his ultimate decision to chop his fingers off to make sure that the message sticks. I do feel like the thing that he struggles with in this movie of like, no one will remember if I'm nice in 50 years, but they will remember me if I make a really great song, if I make art that lasts and stands the test of time, I will be remembered. And I don't just, versus Parik, who's just basically wants to live every day and be content with what he has in the moment and to be loved by the people you're around. That it seems like so big that the fact that there like hasn't really been a movie like this, and I think the thing that the movie is doing that like for me worked incredibly well is like it's already a little bit like it's absurdist as is for Colm to just be like, no, I'm not hanging out with you, like it feels so harsh. And then once we get to the point where he's like, I will chop off my own fingers if you don't hang out with me, to the detriment of my ability to play my fiddle, like the absurdity of this movie is so funny to me, and it's so well written, and it's so like quippy and quick, and it's for me, I just love it so much. But it's like almost like, how has there not been this like friendship movie that's like this in a way that's just so, it does feel so poignant and interesting enough for a film that's like set in like 1920s Ireland, Aidan?
It really is the definition of cutting off your own nose to spite your face. Right. That's essentially what Colm is doing here. Yeah. But I'm so curious as how different people will relate to either one of these characters, because those two perspectives of I must do something with my life, I must need to leave a legacy, compared to I just want to have a good time with my friends and be nice, how different people will react to that. Will people go, yes, I must leave a legacy, or are people content to be nice? And it's such a great, like, it's something I have very much like thought and debated with myself a huge amount, those two differing views. And I very much see both from Colm's
it's why I like the Civil War metaphors, because like these are thoughts that we actually have about ourselves a lot, that like in the movie we exaggerate it, like Martin McDonagh exaggerates to like one person represents this way and one person represents this way, Ariel, but like for me these are thoughts I have internally within myself, which is why I think it's so perfectly set with the backdrop of a civil war happening.
Yeah, and I think, you know, even leaving my thought aside that you alluded to before of, I had a thought before seeing the movie of like, maybe one of them is the other one from the past.
Yeah, right. We were in the midst of planning a dark rewatch at that point, and you were like,
yeah. I thought I had solved it, and I was like worried that I had ruined it for myself. I was like, oh no, I've ruined the twist. But to your point, I think that
I forgot that you thought it was a time travel movie.
I mean, it could be.
Or were you thinking time travel, or kind of like a bit of a Fight Club-esque vibe?
Yeah, maybe.
Ooh, that's See, I hadn't considered that. I like that, you know, along the same lines. But the idea that these, you know, like I said, they exist kind of outside of the quote unquote real world, or can feel at times like they do, because they're not just because they're in a fictional place, but because there's like the war going on, but it's like super, super far in the background. It doesn't seem, at least, to affect their lives. I think the the extremes to which the characters will go, like both sides, I think sticks out, especially Colm's character, Brendan Gleeson's character, rather. It's just so, it's so black and white. Like, it's like this, it's this or that. And this being, I'm going to cut off my fingers at that being having this, this pre, this like pre-existing life and friendship with his friend. I just don't, I do think it's interesting that we never see like the idea, part of the thing fueling these like conspiracy theories for me of like, is someone else from the future or the same person, is like, we never actually saw what their friendship was like. Like, we never got at least like, not that I wanted a flashback. I think the movie is constructed perfectly well, but the idea that it starts right where it starts is very interesting to me, because what did that friendship even look like? You don't get this, like, was it always a little bit more one-sided? Does that even matter? You know, I would make the case no, but I think that's obviously very intentional, but just super, it's super interesting for me to consider what their reality was like before.
Yeah. I mean, there's that scene where Park is telling Colm, like Colm says, yesterday you talked for 2 hours about your donkey shite. He's saying, well, that proves my point right there. I wasn't talking about my donkey shit. I was talking about my pony shit. And the fact that the day before, like, Colm is having this, like, clearly, as Park is talking for 2 hours, having this, like, oh my God, my friend is an idiot. You know, like, I can't hang out with him anymore, you know, but we don't see it. We only get that scene from the retelling of the story the day after. I do think that's super interesting of, like, where you start a story, like, what you're choosing to tell. Even the ending, I think, is, like, they're not like friends, but also there's a read where they're kind of friends, you know, thanks for looking out for my dog anytime, you know, is like, I think they might be friends again, you know, after he just burnt down his house. So I don't know. And I just think, yeah, this like movie about, I think, you know, this is going to sound really silly, but particularly a movie about like male friendship, I think in a time where like, yeah, there is a way in which like, you're like, yeah, we've had a lot of like males, you know, story about men. But I think also this, like, this doesn't feel like toxic masculinity or anything like that's not why they're not friends. It's like so much deeper than that. And that whole scene, the scene that we'll get to that you picked, I feel like is like, that's like the furthest thing I could ever think of from toxic masculinity, where he's just like, shouldn't you just be nice? Shouldn't you just be nice? And then that's what's good about the world. You know,
I remember my daddy, he was nice.
Yeah.
She was nice.
Yeah.
My sister was nice. It's so lovely. I wish I didn't start that sentence saying, I remember my daddy. I really wish I didn't start it that way, but I did.
You know? Yeah.
I also, just a note, because you mentioned the line of thanks for looking after my dog. On the rewatch, I've watched this 3 or 4 times now, I've realized they really want you to think that that dog, that something bad is going to happen to the dog. They really put that down.
Yeah. Well, something does bad happen to Jenny. But as I said yesterday, don't worry. Jenny is happily retired. Colm Farrell made sure that she in retirement. Yeah. Real life Jenny is a retired donkey who does not work in films anymore because Colm Farrell paid for her fee to be free. So, yeah.
Which is particularly amazing because Jenny bit Colm Farrell quite viciously, apparently, according to an interview.
Yeah.
That's sad. He gave it cocaine. All right, that's the one.
Different. Yeah. If you haven't watched EO yet, check out EO. Yeah. big year for donkeys, maybe at the Oscars potentially. All right, let's chat about our scenes. Ariel, I'll go to you first. You're picking the scene where Colm gives Park his sort of ultimatum, or like maybe the like reason to stop nagging me.
Yes.
Pine, Colm. If you don't stop talking to me, and if you don't stop bothering me, or sending your sister or your priest to bother me.
I didn't send my sister to bother you, did I? She has her own mind. Although I did send the priest, only you have me there.
What I've decided to do is this. I have a set of shears at home. And each time you bother me from this day on, I'll take those shears, and I'll take one of my fingers off with them. And I'll give that finger to you. A finger from my left hand, my fiddle hand. And each day you bother me more, another I'll take off, and I'll give you, until you see sense enough to stop, or until I have no fingers left. Does this make things clearer to you?
Not really, no.
Because I don't want to hurt your feelings, Porrig. I don't like. But it feels like the drastic is the only option left open to me.
You've loads of options left open to you. How's fingers the first port of call?
Please don't talk to me. No more, Porrig. Please. I'm begging you.
But
shush like, Polly. Just, you know, shush like.
Yeah, I'd shush like.
I will shush. Except me and my sister were thinking you might just be a bit depressed, Colin. And I tell you this much, my fingers just confirms it. Don't you think, Colin?
Starting from now.
And it's, you know, it's what I love about it is it really, like, in some ways, I don't like that they revealed this in the trailer. Like, I would have gone, and, you know, I think it happened early in the movie that it's that kind of thing where, like, you have to make the decision where you're crafting the trailer. Like,
do I didn't know. So I feel like this totally makes my, like, viewing of the movie experience. Like, mm-hmm. I had no idea. And I'm actually mad because the guy who introduced the movie at TIFF said, like, you know, it's going to teach you the importance of friendship, blah, 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 and fingers. And then I was like, after, I was like, I'm a little mad that you'd say
that. How dare you even tease that? Yeah, no, I would be upset too. But I think to the movie's credit, it ultimately doesn't matter because then you arrive at the scene and you're like, okay, but what is the move? Like, what movie is this actually going to be? Is this going to be the movie where he's threatening to do this and he doesn't? Because that's kind of like what feels realistic to me, at least. And the movie is actually revealing and starting down this very, very dark path, which of course I love. And it's just it, but there's like that tension of, oh my God, is this actually going to happen? And in a way, it takes you out of the movie, but it actually is like drawing you in as well. Of like, you're so invested now in this tension, in this drama, and you're really judging, and you're trying to go back and think of everything that you have seen this character do, and you're like, is he actually capable of doing this? And you know, spoiler alert, the answer is obviously yes. But I love this. I love the beauty and the like fork in the road moment that this moment becomes of like, this is now like the point of no return, essentially.
Yeah. What do you make of this scene? The official like ultimatum from Calm.
I obviously I quite like it, but I think that is exactly the reason they did put that in the trailer. That is the kind of atmosphere they wanted to create with this movie of this ridiculous kind of ultimatum has been laid down, and it is. Hold on, how messed up is this individual? It's like, because I went into this going, he's not going to, he couldn't possibly, and then that slow realization of, oh wait, this is actually, he was being real. Like, I was very much like Dominic at the start going, would you not ask him to do one just to see if he's serious? So yeah, there is definitely a huge tonal shift after that first knock at the door, shall we say.
Yeah.
So yeah, I enjoyed it. I don't know if I would say it completely changed the tone of the movie, because there always was that element of darkness and just oddness. There's a weird oddness and just difference to this movie. A lot of that's down to the premise, but a lot of it is down to the language. Nobody speaks naturally in this movie, and that has to be a choice.
What do you mean by that? Because like, certainly I know that they're like, you know, speaking in Irish accents, but I don't know that I necessarily know that this, like, certainly there is like a tone, like the Dominic for me, like Barry Cohen is like, so this is like one of the weirdest, like when you talk about odd, his like dialect is so strange and odd. Like I just am so fascinated by it. I don't know that he's going to win supporting actor, because I think he's like, he might be split with Brendan Gleeson, but boy, I'd be really happy if he did, because I just think this is like such a unique performance from him. But yeah, I certainly noticed his dialect is different. But do you want to elaborate? Like with
it's the kind of timbre of it. There's a real kind of singing calm response that has to do with it. The best example I can give us is the first interaction at the bar. Are you round? I don't think we're round. It looks like you're round. The repetition of words is so distinct, and it's a little bit of a feature of McDonough's work. You can see it sometimes in Bruges quite a lot. This just, I'd almost compare it to the way like Aaron Sorkin characters sound like Aaron Sorkin characters. If you're in something, they speak in a very specific tone.
Totally a thing, yeah.
This feels like Martin McDonagh's characters. Right. And just the response, like using the word rowing over and over and over again in the same intonation, in the same tone. And there's a couple of other examples of it in the dialogue that it lends this just otherness. And it adds to the unease, it adds to the kind of fairy tale aspect of it. This movie is always just that little bit off,
yeah,
in the best possible way.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Yeah. I love that. I mean, this thing of like, yeah, cutting off his fingers is just, to me, like, I just love it because it's so, the absurdity of it and the dark comedy of like, yeah, again, like, yeah, it's cutting off your, what is the expression? It's
cutting off your nose to smite your face.
Yeah. So like that to me is just like, it's so good that he wants to be he wants to create music and he's going to chop off his fingers at the expense. And then the tragedy of like killing Jenny because he chucks his finger, the whole scene when he does first give his finger. And so Bark puts it in a shoebox, and then he's having dinner with Siobhan, and he's like, well, she's like, what are you going to do with it? And he's like, well, I'm going to go give it back to him. She's like, are you a fucking idiot? Like, stop bothering the man. He cut off his finger. And there's a moment between him threatening and cutting off his finger, and again Dominic is at dinner, and Dominic's like, don't you want to just test him to see if he does it? And Siobhan's like, no, I don't. And it's just like that this is a thing that they're living with in their world, to me, is just like the thing, like, if we, like, honestly, it's a bit like a bit, you know, that like we do, like, you know, Ariel, you know how much I love a bit. And it's just like, yeah, what if like most of the movie is about like Brendan Gleeson maybe cutting off his own fingers because he doesn't want Colin Farrell to hang out with him anymore. Like, perfect, no notes, you know. It's so good. Yeah,
it's a bit of a finger for sure.
Yeah. All right, Aiden, which you picked the bar confrontation scene. I was gonna call it a bar fight, but I don't think we could classify this as a fight.
Yeah, this is the scene where Paul Ricca has one too many whiskeys, yeah, and confronts Colm Sonny Larry at the bar when he's chatting with Padder Carney, I think is the name.
The worst character in the movie.
Gary Lydon does an amazing. You'll see Gary Lydon pop up in an awful lot of McDonald's movies. He's a fairly well known character actor in Ireland, but intensely unlikable in this movie.
Yeah,
which is why I enjoy it, because I think that really fuels like anger in Paul Rick that we haven't seen before. That, oh, you're hanging out with this gobshite over me. This is the person you want to anger, and that's the first time we really see Paul Rick angry. It kind of makes Colm sit up and go, "Oh,
why are you after gobshite? Another bait, is it?"
You, copper, I'm allowed to chat to you, aren't I? It's just Tubby Guts I'm not allowed to talk to.
Actually, no, I rather you didn't talk to me neither.
Well, anyways, do you want to know what the three things that I hate the most on Inis Éireann is?
Not really.
One? Policemen. Two? Pudgy fiddle players. And three? Well, that's some funny thing for three, was it?
I start again. One, policemen. Two.
Pudgy fiddle players.
Shite, what was three?
Going back to your own gang now, Paddock. I'm serious now.
Serious, are you? And talking to me? Are you?
Siobhan. Works out with brains and whiskey and Colm's there. You'd better come.
You, Colm Doherty, do you know what you used to be?
No, Patrick, what did I used to be?
Nice. You used to be nice, didn't you not? And now, do you know what you are? Not nice.
Ah, well, I suppose niceness doesn't last then, does it, Patrick? But will I tell you something that does last?
What? And I don't say something stupid like music.
Music lasts.
Knew it!
And paintings last. And poetry lasts.
So does niceness.
Do you know who we remember for how nice they was in the 17th century?
Who?
Absolutely no one. Yet we all remember the music of the time. Everyone to a man knows Mozart's name.
Well, I don't, so there goes that theory. And anyway, we're talking about niceness. Not what's his name. And my mommy, she was nice. I remember her. And my daddy, he was nice. I remember him. And my sister, she's nice. I'll remember her forever. I'll remember her.
And who else will?
Who else will what?
Remember Siobhan and your niceness. No one will. In 50 years' time, no one will remember any of us.
yet the music of a man who lived 2 centuries ago.
Yet, she says, like he's English.
Come on, Boric.
I don't give a feck about Mozart or Borvolvin or any of them funny name feckers. I'm Boric Sulawan. And I'm nice.
And, like, I genuinely think the most cruel thing that Colm does to Porrick in this entire movie is say, oh, that's the most interesting he's ever been, and Alma made me like him again. That is so cruel. So cruel.
Because we get this, I mean, there's so many scenes we could have picked. And, like, this scene, I love this scene. I mean, he's angry, and then it just, like, turns into essentially sadness. And there's such a truth to Park in this moment when he's saying, you know, I remember my dad, and he was nice. I remember my mom, and she was nice. I remember my sister. Like, I always remember my sister. She's nice, and she's standing right behind him, and it's so friggin' cute. It's so good. But this scene, because Colm says that, Dominic tells Park later. He's like, yeah, he said that he almost liked you. And so this is, I think Park has also already told the guy that his mom or his dad has been hit by a bread van, which is also how his mother died. And he's kind of bragging. He's like, oh yeah, like, look at me. Like, maybe I'm not nice. Maybe I'm this, like, mean guy, and that's how I'll be friends with Colm. And Dominic is like, you're a psychopath. Like, you're awful. And he leaves him. And so the whole thing just, like, works so brilliantly. I think from the moment you get the bar fight to that scene with Dominic and Park.
It's also ridiculously funny. One of the funniest lines in the movie is in this fight. It was like, everybody to a man knows Mozart. It was like, well, I don't.
So that's such a
slap down from Siobhan. Yes. Actually, it was the 17th century.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah. Ariel, what'd you make of the bar confrontation, the bar fight?
Yeah, I mean, and to Aiden's point, I was just thinking, it's just like a lot of the movie, it's functioning on so many different levels, and it's moving the plot along. It's a moment of, like, great tension. It's very funny. You're not sure what's going to happen after it. You know, you understand the motivations. To Aiden's point, the cruelty of, like, that line that he says, like, that's opening a little bit of hope again for Park. It's just like, oh God, this is what, and I say this in the best way, but I remember being like, where is this movie going to go? Like, it's just, it's so fascinating to just watch the story unfold. And it does feel like that Colm's character hanging out with that piece of crap guy feels personal in a way that the rest of his actions kind of don't, at least to me. Like, when he's like, I don't want to hang out with you, that feels very like, okay, I'm going to respect that boundary. Whereas this is like, wait, but this is what you're doing instead of that. And that feels brutal. It can't help but feel personal and brutal, like you just said, Grace.
Well, I think the thing for me too is that what this scene shows me is I often talk about, like, the saddest shows. Like, when I watch a dark show, watching The Last of Us, I do need, like, these bits of hope, right? Like, I don't want to watch something that is incredibly depressing for 90 minutes. I want to watch something that might be sad, but has moments of levity or hopefulness. And that's what the scene does, is that it shows that Pork is, like, kind of just suffering with this idea of, like, is being nice not an... I always thought that being nice was enough to, like, be friends with somebody. And, like, clearly... it's not. And he's trying to, like, push back. And then he's, like, so firm in his belief at this moment that, like, actually it is. Like, people will remember me because I was nice. And Colm being like, no, nobody will remember you in 50 years. You got to write a great song, you know? It's like, it's heartbreaking and uplifting all at the same time, I think. And just the way that he's saying it in front of his sister, too. I'm like, it's so uplifting. Yeah.
It's referenced as well by the pair and the bartender and his friend. It was like, you're one of life's good guys.
Right.
And
right.
Because I used to think that was a good thing to be, but the way you make it sound, like, horrible. I do need to shout out Pat Short and John Kenny, by the way. Pat Short
is the bartender
and his friend, because they are actually a very famous in Ireland comedic duo. They are.
Oh, they're great.
The Dumbelievables, they were known as. They were in the early 90s. They were a comedic duo, and it's great to see them reunited, actually. But Pat Short, in particular, as John Joe, the barman, is fantastic. His reactions to everybody are obscenely hilarious to me. Like, when Siobhan comes in, how are you, Siobhan? Would you like a sherry? No, right, so just right, walks off. Yeah, right, so.
We haven't really we'll chat about Siobhan here, because the scene I picked is when Dominic asked Siobhan out.
How do...
Jesus Christ, Dominic, would you ever stop creeping up on people? You almost gave me a feckin' heart attack.
I wasn't creeping up on you, I was sidling up on you.
Between you and that ghoul, Jesus.
I always call her a ghoul too, because she is a ghoul. Jeez, we have a lot in common, don't we? Me and you. Calling old people ghouls and that. It's a great old lake, isn't it? I'm glad I caught you, actually. Because there was something I was wanting to ask you, actually. And discovering how much we have in common, well, just makes me want to ask you even more.
We don't have anything in common.
Don't skip ahead. But yeah, what I was wanting to ask you was something along the lines of, should have planned this, really. But yeah, what I was wanting to ask you was, you probably wouldn't ever want to, I don't know, to fall in love with a boy like me, would you?
No, Dominic, I don't think so, love.
No, yeah, no. I was thinking, no. Not even in the future, like when I'm your age. Yeah, no. I didn't think so. Just thought I'd ask in the off chance. You know, like, faint heart and that. Well, there goes that dream. Well, I best go over there and do whatever that thing over there I was going to do was.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I picked this scene is it's just, it's, again, it is like a sad scene because I think it's like one of the things that is going to, like, and I'm not putting this on Siobhan, like, just like before I say this, but like, Dominic, I mean, I guess it's not confirmed, but I always thought Dominic does kill himself. He sort of like loses a lot of like the shine of like with Park and Calm fighting. Like, I think he's like losing, like, he's like, yeah, I thought you were nice. I thought you were one of the nice ones. And obviously he's like being abused both sexually and physically by his father. And so like all of these things adding together. And again, like the scene where he gets like rejected by Siobhan in about the nicest way. And again, I'm not saying that like Siobhan should go out with him so he won't kill himself. Like that is not right. But the scene is just so funny as well. When he is like the way he is wording his questions and like, I was just thinking like whether you'd want to go out. But he asked if you'd ever fall in love with a boy like me. That's the exact line. And she's like, oh, Dom, no. And he goes, yeah, I'm going to go over there and do whatever I was going to do. And I didn't think so.
Well, maybe not now. Maybe in the future when we're both the same age or something like that.
He's like, no.
That's not how that works.
Yeah, no. He says something along those lines. I want to pick up something as well that you mentioned to me about Barry Keoghan's performance in this, particularly as Dominic. And he is so strange, but it's his work with his eyes is entrancing to me, because I think it's a very, very apt description of Asperger's. The blinking, the unfocused, the twitching. There's definitely something
there
at work. Something at work with him. It's obviously undefined, but you can. I think it was definitely a choice on Barry Keoghan's part to portray Dominic like that with the blink. In the original scene where they're drinking the poutine, do you guys know what poutine is? By the way,
no. I'm curious about that. I mean, lots of. I recognize most of the Guinness in the episode or in the movie, but no, I don't know what this is.
So I'm about to be really pedantic in here. They actually got that wrong. Those bottles did not exist in a time period.
Oh,
they
were,
well.
Guess who's not winning Best Picture?
Yes,
the bottle they're drinking. This is the bottle they're drinking when they're talking about, like, he's like, yeah, I told that guy about his dad got hit by a
bottle. Well, yeah, like, they're drinking Guinness from bottles, but I don't believe that the Guinness family, the Guinness Corporation, introduced those particularly nitrated bottles I don't think they were around at that time.
Guinness.
I might be wrong in this.
I thought it. So, what's the alcohol you were talking about?
What do
you
mean? Poutine.
Yeah, what's that?
It's not poutine, Grace.
It's not poutine. Poutine and poutine would be a potent mix. Poutine is unaged whiskey. It's essentially moonshine. It means poutine is Irish. It means little pot because that's where we make it, and it's basically illegal.
I love simple moonshine. Etymology. This is what they're drinking. This is what they're drinking when they have their like talk to Dominic.
Yes.
And Bark. Okay, got it. I just need to, like, I think I wanted to use the scene also as an example of like of Kerry Condon, who is nominated for a supporting actress in this movie as Siobhan. This isn't even her line, but the interactions, her relationship with Parak, when she writes Parak and then he writes back and he says, "Dear Siobhan, obviously I don't know what ensconced is, but I thank you for the offer for free bed and the whatnot." so good. Obviously I don't know what ensconced is. It's so good. It's so good.
So funny.
There's so many, you know, I use this scene because I think like it's so good. The dynamic is so good. But there's like a million scenes that you could just touch. The way that he fleshes out this little island, and like this movie is mostly about Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson, but you do have Barry Cohen, you do have Kerry Condon's character, but like then you have like the lady who gets the mail and is like, you know, you don't give me anything. Like, you know, there's no news. And he's like, no, no news. And then the police officer comes in and he's like, I got news. And then later when she's like, so you got a letter from a library on the mainland. Like, she's like, oh, clearly read the mail. I don't know. It just feels the priest who's like, does take Park's advice to like, question Calm about how he's feeling, and that even is very powerful at the end of the movie when he re-asks him any despair, and Calm says, yeah, I got some despair. Like, it's really powerful. Like, it's a joke at first, right, to be asked about, you know, how he's feeling about Parak and like if there's anything else going on, and at the end of the movie he comes back and he actually does have despair. You're like, oof, that like hits hard, you know.
I love the confessional scenes. There is some heartbreaking lines and some side-splittingly funny lines, and those ones are like, well, look, if punching a police officer is a sin, we might as well just pack the whole thing in. Delivery of that line was like, yeah, but I'm glad you brought up the repeated mention of the despair, because it you can't be ignored.
Yeah,
Brendan Gleeson's character is a sick man.
Yeah,
he is not well.
He's depressed. Yeah,
yeah,
and,
they make a joke of it.
Yeah, and I think at the beginning,
it's such an Irish thing.
He's figured out.
He's
figured out how to cure his depression. He thinks, which is, I'll just cut Parak out of my life. I'll create a great song, and I'll be happy. You know, it creates a great song, not very happy. This movie is great. So let's do If It Won, which is a segment where we will give our reactions of how we would feel if, at the end of the 95th Academy Awards on Sunday, March 12th, the end of the night, the last award is given out, and it goes to Martin McDonagh for Banshees of Inisherin. How would you feel, Aidan? I feel like I could guess, but I'll let you explain.
I would be happy. Genuinely think it's deserved. I mean, if Avatar beats Banshees of Inisherin, I will riot.
That movie made $2 billion, though, Aidan.
I don't care.
If we convert, what do you use in Ireland?
Dollars in Ireland,
euro.
Grace. Don't
you use a euro, yeah. Yeah. If we convert, have we converted the Banshees box office into Ireland. Euros?
Yeah,
depends what part of Ireland you're talking about.
Yes. You'd be happy. I would be very happy. Ariel, I think that in a year where Everything Ever All at Once has come out, I think Banshees is sort of playing, I have a good pun, second fiddle.
You could have just said it, but you were like, no, I need to set it up.
Yeah. Explaining a pun.
Hold on.
You say the pun.
Hold on,
that's next level.
Watch this. And I say that, no pun intended.
Except you clearly did intend the pun.
Grace.
Feck off, you guys.
Feck off, you gilly gooly.
I think Everywhere All at Once sort of has this like hold on the like indie sort, like the, and I know, like, I don't really feel like Banshees is like an indie film, and even, you know, I don't even know
but
an
it
indie
feels
film anymore.
Like one, it feels
I,
like one.
I know it doesn't, right. It's like not the block, it's not a blockbuster, it's right. That whatever, and so I feel like with Everything Ever All at Once, like, I think in terms of it being a story that actually a lot of people are walking away being like, oh my god, it's actually so much more depressing than I thought, and I thought it was going to be a comedy, I think it's like it has. I think that's what gives it this like indie feel. And I feel like in a year where Everything Everywhere All at Once is, I think if you could remove, in a multiverse where Everything Everywhere All at Once doesn't come out last year, I think Banshees would have this energy of being the film that could like might break through and win. But I think Everything Everywhere All at Once is like sort of like, and I don't mean this like, I love Everything Everywhere All at Once, but like, and not holding it back, but like standing in the way, like that's the film that like, if there's going to be like a beloved surprise, and even I think Everything Everywhere Once is like the front runner, but like I think this like lovable film, I think it's going to be Everything Everywhere Once rather than Banshees. I don't know if that tracks, Ariel.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, you know, to the indie point first, you know, these days there are just fewer films that are actually indie films and feel like indie films being made. That's just, mm-hmm. you know, the name of the Marvel slash franchise slash, you know, whatever game that we're in right now, unfortunately, as far as like movies that come out in theaters. But I think, yeah, I mean, Everything Every All at Once for sure is taking up a lot of the oxygen in the room because people are just so, in some cases, confused by it, in some cases, delighted by it. And, so, you know, it's a movie that gives you a lot to talk about, but this movie is just, this movie, Banshees, is so tight and very, very intentionally and almost perfectly executed. So I think it's, you know, it's in a way that arguably Everything Everywhere All at Once is not. You could argue, and in some of those cases I would argue, or some of those points I would argue. So, you know, how would I feel? I feel all right about it.
Yeah. I guess in the way that like In Bruges doesn't really get nominated for much. It gets for original screenplay. And then he comes out with Three Billboards, which I think is a very polarizing film, but does get nominated for Best Picture. This feels like he was able to capture like what people want out of an Oscar film. Like, I think he was trying to do with Three Billboards. Not that he was trying to do with Three Billboards. I think that's just what the movie ended up being, with the like lovability of In Bruges. And he's combined these two things. And I feel like if this would win in so many years, and I think like there's a chance it doesn't win just because of Everything Ever All at Once. But I will say the caveat to that is it did beat that movie at the Golden Globes. It beat it out for Best Musical or Comedy. And so I don't know. The thing you were saying earlier, Ariel, about momentum, like when does this movie peak? I think that they nailed when they released this movie for it to get nominated, for sure. Like, I think that like it came out on streaming before nominations and a lot of people saw it and loved it. And so, but now I'm worried that like it's a long runway to then win the Best Picture, Aiden. So I don't know if you're with us or not, if we lost you on our like Oscar-y talk.
The internal politics of the Oscars is a little bit lost on me. The minutiae it kind of goes over my head. But if I were to put one adjective on this movie, I would put it in the best possible way as unsettling. This movie sticks with you, particularly at the end. Those last scenes was like, thanks for looking after my dog, no problem. Yeah. And then it ends and you're going, huh? And it just sticks with you. And all of the best movies that I've ever experienced in my life have had that effect with me. I'm still thinking about it. I'm still trying to analyze it. I'm still rethinking about it. I'm looking at the list of other Best Picture nominees. Of the ones I've seen, none of them gave me that. Avatar, absolutely not. Women Talking did, actually, weirdly enough, which is hilarious with Frances McDormand in there.
Yeah,
Obviously, Everything Everywhere All at Once is amazing. Oh, yes, Top Gun really left me with thoughts. But no, I don't know if it would be a front runner, but it has to be in the equation. I don't think anybody would be surprised if it won. No, I don't think they should be.
I agree too. I think Everything Everywhere All at Once is the front runner at the moment. And then I've been saying that there are like these like, there's like three other films that like if they won, I'm definitely not surprised. I put Banshees in there. So that's how I don't think it's a front runner, but I don't think it'd be surprising if it won, and I think it would be well deserved and I would be excited. So yeah. Aiden, thanks so much for coming on. We finally got to talk about Banshees. Did we miss anything? Is there anything? I feel like this movie.
I'm absolutely sure I'm forgetting about like 100 different things I wanted to talk about. If nothing else, this is an amazing movie for the Irish Tourism Board, because I'd say people took a look at Achill Islands where they filmed this, or the Aran Islands. Because yes, Inisherin is not a real place. The name quite literally means island of Ireland. But my Martin McDonagh holidayed in this part of the world, which is where he knew how beautiful it was. So he's very familiar with the west coast of Ireland where it was filmed. So I'd say there's going to be an influx of people wanting to come over and have a look at Inisherin.
I'm so annoyed it didn't get a cinematography nod. It really only had, it gets screenplay, director, Best Picture, and then this like the smattering of acting noms and score. I think the score is really good. I don't know if it's the best, but cinematography, I feel like it absolutely should have won. I don't know. I don't understand how it did.
I think I know the reason why. It gives an unrealistic expectation for weather on the west coast of Ireland, because I don't think it rains heavily once. And I've seen interviews with Martin McDonagh, Brendan Gleeson, and Colin Farrell, and every one of them said, yeah, we couldn't get over how nice the weather was. Like, that shouldn't have happened. We got lucky with the shooting schedule. Yeah, because like the vistas and the stuff that they see, yeah, it might have been enhanced, but like those, they hang on the red skies in the evening quite a lot, which is, as somebody who's seen those sunsets over the Atlantic, they are properly stunning.
Okay. All right. Well, Banshees, I love the film. Even if it doesn't win, it'll be in my movie rotation for a long time to come. I'm not a big movie rewatcher. I know that's surprising on day three of us rewatching 10 movies, but Banshees is one I'm like, I watched it today and I already want to rewatch it. So it's just so funny. Aiden, where can people find you and what else do you got going on?
I pop up every now and again on the post-show recaps. I have appeared on an episode of Huey, talking all about the season finale of the third season of Doctor Who, the reboot. Mm-hmm. So I'm on there. Get yourself onto the post-show recaps Discord if you join at the Patreon at the Discord level, and you can interact with me. And I just pop up on various podcasts. If there's anything Irish related, I tend to have a foot in the door. I seem to be reserved for that, which I'm more than happy with. But that's where you can find me on the interwebs.
You're typecast as an Irish fella.
I mean, I lean into it.
Yeah. I am on Twitter at @HiFromGrace. Ariel, where can people find you?
I am also on Twitter at @ThatOtherAriel.
And we will be back tomorrow with another almost a big picture nominee, but it's a best picture nominee. Until then, I'm Grace, that's Ariel. This is